I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Chicago. It has Lakeshore Drive. It has the Cubbies. It has Willis Tower. And now it has 750. That's right. The amazing 750 service is now available in Illinois. And that means that it's powerful and easy to use search tools for identifying wholesale pricing, locating trade tastings, saving lists of tasting notes, and much more, including the very excellent tool for processing credit apps, is now a click away for Chicagoland. To celebrate the launch, we here at the show are talking with buyers, distributors, retailers, and sommeliers from the great city of Chicago and releasing that series of episodes to you in the coming weeks. What is going on in the Windy City? You're going to hear it from the people who know. And if you are tuning in from Chicago itself, be sure to give 750 a try. 750.com, it's in Illinois, and it's the future.
Marcus Savage on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Nice to see you.
It's good to see you, too. It's good to be here.
So you do a number of things, but you got started in Denver, Colorado at a wine bar.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
And how did that go down?
It went down. After graduate school, I got an MBA, which is difficult to believe for a lot of people, but I got an MBA. And
you think it's difficult because of how you look now?
Yes, exactly.
Like, yeah. With the tats, maybe, and like, yeah, the
exactly,
Grateful Dead.
Yeah, exactly. And I went to work. My father was an entrepreneurial sort of guy and was in a lot of different things. And I went to work for him, which was an utter disaster. And
did you ask him about which tattoos you should get?
Yeah, he was actually never minded the tattoos. He didn't like the earrings originally when I was 18. Was the ones that bothered him. So,
but this is that was probably the 80s, and then by the 90s.
This was the 90s. Yeah, I get my first tattoo when I was 21. Before these things were cool, actually. So, or supposedly cool, I guess.
Back when it used to just be Navy guys.
Yeah, exactly. Navy and I had like a fraternity and my name on the back, you know, skull and crossbones. So.
I mean, the Born to Lose thing is really out of fashion now.
That's about as bad as mine was.
That's what I remember. Yeah. Like guys with actual Born to Lose tattoos.
Without a doubt, yeah.
You never see that now.
No, I'm not that bad. Yeah.
I really want to run into like a hot Asian chick that's like 25 with like a Born to Lose yeah. As opposed to fucking rose. You know how many times I see like flowers and stuff?
And I don't have any flowers.
I think that would be.
I have a lot of. All right, and I don't have a lot of skulls. I've got three skulls, but
hey, man, yeah, you know, better than just one.
Never have too many skulls.
Were you a He-Man guy? Is that where that's coming from?
A what?
A He-Man?
No, you know, metal.
Yeah, metal.
I
okay.
love heavy metal music, and yeah. I always have.
So, and you still, yeah. You're into that scene
very,
still,
very much. So,
like yeah. You hang with guys and stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah. On. I've been, yeah. Fortunate enough, actually tonight I'm going to dinner, but not name dropping with Maynard from Tool. Just because
you are name dropping.
Yeah, I am name dropping, but
I love when a guy says he's not going to do something and then he does it. It's awesome.
I'm not, you know, it's more. I don't know him through the metal scene. I know him through the wine scene because we represent his wines in all our markets and. Which are a sidebar story. I mean, he's the man with it. He makes great wines and he makes them himself. He does the whole thing, so which is quite cool, you know, compared to some of these other, you know, that are just like, you know,
we'll slap their name.
Yeah,
on
their
thing.
Names on the on
you're
the label.
You're saying,
you
know? Nicki Minaj doesn't make that wine? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I'm not gonna say no. I don't.
She's
know.
Not there like squeezing citrus fruit into the Moscato.
We did. And it was actually pretty decent. But we did Motorhead Shiraz for a while, and I did get to go backstage at a concert in Milwaukee and meet Lemmy and everything. I mean, he I don't think he even really knew that they had this product out in the market.
Oh yeah,
so, yeah.
He was like, "Who are you?"
He was kind of like, "What is this?"
You know, a Motorhead show. I think it's hard to tell the crowd from the roadies,
yes,
from the performers.
It is without a doubt. It's
you know
all,
what I
it's
mean?
It's all blended together.
It's like, you know, on the other side of the world, tennis matches are like that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The spectators dress like the players.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, how many yeah. people need to wear yeah. white shorts at this thing?
Unless you're Prince, then you know like, what I mean?
Whatever. Right, then you do your own.
Whatever he was just doing at the French Open, and we saw it with a cane and there was a scepter, like, okay. So yeah, I think I lasted maybe 3 months with working for my father, and then
How did that go down in the end? Was there yelling?
No, he
screaming?
Was. Yeah, he was okay. I think he knew that, you know. Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things. I was basically was following him around, you know, and he'd be like, "Give me a cup of coffee."
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm like, I just got out of grad school.
Was your paycheck labeled allowance?
Basically, yeah. Basically, like, I'm still 18 and living in a home.
He's like, it's the car wash. Like,
yeah, exactly. Nothing changed. Can you pick me up at the airport? I just was sort of getting into wine at that time. I wasn't, you know, I did not know nothing, but I didn't know, you know, what I know now, obviously.
And why were you getting into wine? I mean, was your dad into wine?
Or? No, my family did not drink wine at all. I mean, occasionally maybe a Blue Nun or a Black Tower. And I can remember Lancer's Rosé at times, but, and I remember stealing it as a kid, you know, if I could. And, no, I just, I was a big partier. That's basically what it was. I just got tired. Well, growing up in rural Kansas, that you start drinking at an early age, that's what you do. There's nothing else to do. So I just eventually just got tired of beer and then tried to do the mixed drink thing. I just, you know, got kind of tired of that. I never was a shot guy, so I didn't do that. I just thought, well, let's try this wine thing out. And, I started drinking, white Zinfandel is where I started. So that's why, I never, anybody likes that, wants it now. I'm like, you know, it started me on my path. So then a friend of mine had just got his art history degree from the University of Denver, the same school that I was at.
A lot of money in that.
Yeah, tons. He was like looking around like, oh, what the hell am I going to do? So, yeah, so it just at the same time, it's like we just started talking. It's like, hey, why don't we try to start a wine bar here in Denver?
And how many wine bars were there?
Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was 19. We opened in November of 95. And we were in an area that they call Lodo, which is lower downtown. It's where Coors Field is now. And they were just beginning to build Coors Field. Morton's of Chicago had just opened up next door to us. But otherwise, it was still kind of Skid Row-ish a little bit. Wine Coop Brewery, which is, I guess, still owned by Hinkenlooper, who's the governor of Colorado now. And we decided, well, let's do this and roll the dice and went for it. And we were, you know, crazy or naive enough to do 60 wines by the glass and do stuff that nobody would really ever considered pouring, especially in Denver, Colorado. I mean, we did Silver Oak, we did Dom, we did...
By the glass.
By the glass.
Which was probably a big deal.
It was a huge deal. I think when we opened, I can't remember which vintage it was, of Lafitte we did. I remember 1990, La Casa Brunello we did. You know, people, when we were doing it, was like, you guys are out of your minds. And then it went great guns. But I don't remember exactly what pricing strategy we used, but it wasn't the nowadays of like, you know, one glass for the bottle cost. It was reasonable. And we had three reds, three whites each that we were like, in those years, I think we were $3 or $4 a glass.
Oh, okay.
So we had did that too as well. So we were kind of the whole spectrum. And it was like, yeah, we had like 60 wines, and then we had a Cruvenet system and did that whole route too. And then it was back when the cigar smoking was popular and allowed, so we had a separate...
Remember that?
Related, yeah, I do, actually. Wished it was still around.
Man, yeah. That was such a thing.
I knew we were in trouble when New York City banned smoking. It's like, shit, the whole world's in trouble now. New York City's banned it, so... Yeah, we had a separate room, and so it was, and you know, a bunch of, you know, Armagnacs, cognacs, that sort of thing too. So, yeah, that's how that started. And
how long was that?
We lasted about it was never what we even imagined it to be. It got to the point where we had a bouncer, and we were checking IDs, and you know, we just thought we were opening a wine.
Your friends were coming by,
yeah,
and you're like, tell some of these guys from the Motorhead show
to come by. Yeah. No, it's just it just took off, and then we had, you know, kids trying to get in, and people, you know, stealing the dummy bottles, carrying the dummy bottles out the door. You know, it's like there's
people trying to steal the dummy bottles.
It's like, there's nothing in those, guys. I mean, you think there's a 6 liter of Veuve Clicquot sitting right there for the hell of it? You know, go ahead, yeah, have it. And so I think we both burned out. Probably, I think it was a year and a half, and then we had a guy that wanted to buy it, and we sold it. And then that's how I moved on to distribution.
And you started distribution in Colorado?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we started with Classic Wines. Yeah, so I knew our partner there is a guy called Scott High, and he worked for what was then Midwest Beverage, which is a larger distributorship. And then Colorado in those years, there wasn't really anything that small. There was a company called Grand Vin that was probably doing, I don't know, 17 or 18 million in sales, but that was it. So it was actually his idea. He's like, would you be interested in looking in and doing this? I'm like, yeah, I don't really know much about it, but yeah, let's give it a shot and see what happens. And we started, we were small. I always joke, I felt like, as a member of the Communist Party, I had a leaflet. It was basically all we had would take out. I remember I had like Kermit Lynch and Quivera from California. That was really about it in the old days. So
it's a pretty big book.
That's
now.
Where we started. Yeah, it's a big book now. It's gone in, I think this year we're projecting we'll do 32 million of sales. So yeah, it's gotten, far more.
And pretty diverse.
And very diverse, yeah.
Got a lot of American, got a lot of Italian.
Very diverse, yeah. You know. And spirits, we're into the spirits thing now. We've kind of...
Everybody's into the spirits.
I know, we kind of resist.
Like you can't ignore.
No, you can't. I thought it was one of those things, I thought this is a total fad and it'll just go away. And now I'm completely thinking the other way. And I think, we've missed some spirits books because we had our eyes closed. So, and there's nothing wrong with spirits. I'm not bashing spirits at all, but...
Was it like The Godfather where they're talking about the drug business?
Yes, that's exactly it.
The guy keeps you.
No, you can't do that. No drugs. Yeah, no spirits. you can break the law anywhere else you want, but yeah, that's exactly it. So,
because now it's just, it's like.
Oh, you got to. But, we were trying to, I remember like talking when this subject came up, it's like, oh, and then we got to have just different buyer. We got to have the rep see a different buyer on a different day and, blah, 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 blah. And I think, we just basically tried to convince ourselves that this wasn't the thing to do. And we always had like the occasional, DeRose Armagnacs, things sure. like that, but there were, we weren't selling.
But it's probably a generational thing too. You probably looked at it like we tried to get away from booze.
Yeah, exactly.
Not closer to booze.
Exactly.
We tried to not be a liquor company. We tried to be a wine company.
That's exactly right.
And then when artisanal spirits came up, you were kind of
this stigma of, okay, now... We're a liquor company, we're a liquor company that has wine, I think that was part of the stigma, but now we've embraced it and
money's nice. It buys nice things.
You got to fill the trucks with something, So,
but the market there's more interesting spirits though.
Oh, by far. Yeah. Yeah. We don't, like High West and stuff like that. We represent in some markets. We don't do nothing. We're not Brown Foreman or anything like that. So,
give it a couple of years.
Yeah. Not that we'd say no, but yeah. So
then what was the next move? You started up a distributorship
in Colorado, and that was like right. It was not technically, I don't know what the statute of limitations is on this one, but it was not technically legal at the first because I had a on premise license still with the bar because it had not officially sold when we opened Classic. So I was on two licenses. And so I think that was end of 96 when we opened Classic. And then my wife is from here, and we moved here in 90. She wanted to move back to Chicago. And I was kind of like, I think the sayings go west, young man, not go east, but I could be wrong. And now I love Chicago, don't get me wrong. But we moved here in 99. And again, sort of, naive and a little wet behind the ears, maybe thinking, well, I don't really want to work for somebody, so what are we going to do? Let's try to do the same thing here. And everywhere I turned, everybody's like, you're crazy. You'll never get in here. I'll never get in here. And it did. It took a good year and a half. And then when Southern came in and bought all of the Terlato stuff, it was kind of had enough connections with guys that were at Classic. They were like, hey, you guys got to do something now. We want, we're not going to be with Southern. We want to get out of there. So
you're saying that guys that you worked with in Colorado, like suppliers,
didn't
want to work with Southern.
No. And we're like,
and they saw their portfolio going that way, and they were like, they wanted an alternative.
Yeah. And they knew, most of them knew that I was here trying to get that done, but, they just never, none of them were, like, committed yet to just, let's jump ship and go and see, because Classic was doing great for them, but hell, they didn't know. They didn't know if, Maverick.
Because sales are sales.
Sales are sales,
Yeah.
But then when that happened, it was like, okay, now let's go.
So all of a sudden you had a portfolio.
Right, exactly, yeah. Something at least, scalable where we could...
What was of the early...
It wasn't huge. The first one over is a good friend of mine, and is Eric Solomon. He was the first one, and he kind of actually was the one that spearheaded this whole thing, like, okay, you guys got to go. And he was with Direct Imports, and now who our partner at Maverick is Scott Larson. He was at Direct Imports and was the manager of the European sellers portfolio there. So he kind of put us together and said, hey, guys... you guys need to have lunch and sit down. Yeah, so
probably was helpful to you to have a local guy on the ground.
But by far,
especially when you're in a couple states.
By far, and I didn't know, you know, I knew by that time I knew the restaurants and stuff, and I knew some of the buyers, but not, you know, not.
You didn't have the local connections.
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah, not at all.
But you're also, as you said, the kind of guy that maybe doesn't like to work for other people.
No, I'm not a, you know, I admit this, I'm not a very good detail guy at all either. I mean, you know, if you left me to run the ship, it'd be going down in probably, you know, in a New York minute. So, yeah, so that's, yeah, that's one of my philosophies is if, you know, hire people that are smarter than you and put them around you, you know, so.
So you start up Maverick and you still have Eric Solomon in that portfolio today.
Yep, we do. Yes, we do. Yep.
Who are some of the other people you represent in Illinois?
Bigger, I mean, there's Schaefer. That's another one that we have. Plump Jack. We have Dresner, which I love that book too. We have Dresner Selections.
That's a pretty big portfolio.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's, I mean, of, you know, it's and I mean, those are kind of wines that we all love really. And we like to sell. I mean, we obviously have other, you know, you can't just make your living off that. We always have a joke. It takes, you know, it takes the same amount of cost to deliver one case as it does 10. So you might as well deliver, you know, try to deliver 10 as well. So, Rudy Weiss for German Selection. So, you know, all the way down, I mean, like Litterai, you know, Ted, who makes our Burn Cottage wines, you know, who's, you know, I mean, obviously is the man, I think, in my eyes. And so, yeah, things like that.
But some pretty strong personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, yep. You got along with Eric, you got along with Joe Dresner.
Yep. I love Joe.
Yeah. So how did those relationships meet? I mean, what was the...
You know, I don't even know how... That's a good question on both those. I don't remember. I think with Eric Solomon, I knew Steve Miles, who used to be his national sales manager and lived in Denver and still does live in Denver. I think he introduced us and we just sort of hit it off. And I went over to Spain as a wine fan and visited Chloe Rasmus with him and Daphne and just hung out with him in the Pure Rot. And I think it just sort of snowballed from there. And with Dresner, boy, that's a good question. I don't even remember how that came about. I think it came through. Oh yeah, you know what I do is it came through Scott Larson because I think he had them at Direct here, and I remember Joe coming in town. And it was one of those like, you know, as a Joe seemed to do sometimes. It could be like, you know, I remember leaving that dinner going like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah. So
that turned into like, oh, I love this guy. You know, so that's how that happened. Yeah, he was one of the first. I forgot it. He was one of the first portfolios we had here too as well. So. And then it just sort of, you know, with Joe, it just kind of went into just, you know, he kept, I remember when he asked me for an introduction with Classic, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I'll do it, but I don't think it's their sort of book that they're going to take, you know? And I said, so I can't promise you anything. And lo and behold, they took it. So, you know, I told them what I thought that they should do, you know, but, you know, I can't.
They should say no.
They shouldn't say no. Yeah, yeah, exactly. They shouldn't say no. Don't take it. Yeah, they should say no. And
because it's, I mean, it is. There's a lot of new world in that book.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of new world, and they, you know, I think they sell that, and I think that's why they took it, you know. And I mean, it kind of it fell apart. It is a funny Joe story. Joe went and visited the market and did a work with, and
how was that?
There was an interesting story that he and a guy, actually Eric Lambertus, who's a rep, used to be a rep for us, and he actually worked for me at Enoteca. I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but it was a French like bistro in Boulder, and the guy, you know, the chef owner was French. And Eric got a call, so I got to take this call. I'm sorry, I stepped out for a minute. Comes back in, and Joe and this guy are like, he said, like nose to nose in full French, just like, you know, both of them frothing at the mouth, like arguing with each other. And I guess the gist of it was what Joe told him, his wine list sucked. And he's a Frenchman. He should be ashamed of this. So, and that's what Eric said, you know, the guy's actually, Joe was completely right. But, you know, it's probably not a good way to get your wines on the list, though. So.
Easy to be remembered that way.
Yeah, it is easy to be remembered. So, and then, but you know, then when Classic had sort of slipped there with sales, and I, God bless, you know, Joe, he called me. He was like, you know, I this is what's going on. You know, if it upsets you, it bothers you that you want me to stay and stick this out. I'm like, absolutely not. You know, you got to do what you got to do, and you know, and so yeah, I miss that guy actually.
What was it like repping the Dresner portfolio in the Colorado or in the Chicago market?
It's good here. I mean, those wines are, you know, it's gotten progressively better, and there's just enough fans of those wines. I mean, some, you know, are like, you know, the cult wines. I mean, like Rougeard. I mean, if we could sell 10 times more Rougeard than we get, you know, than the, I think we get three cases or something like that. I mean, it's so bad. I have to go. I'm like, I want to buy some Rougeard. I go and I buy it back. I think you are interviewing or did Craig Perman. I go and buy it back from Craig. He buys it and I buy it back from him at retail even to get it. So it's like, yeah, I can't get any.
I hope you're not paying too much on the VIG.
No, and then the other damn thing is, and I'll go in, like, I think it was like 6 months ago, and I'm at Tin Bells in New York, and I'm like, they got magnums of it. God, what the hell, you know? I take a mag.
You enter into the Chicago market,
yep,
kind of in the slipstream of Southern moving, yep, into the market. Yep. How have you seen Chicago change since the time you've been here?
And there's been more smaller distributorships pop up too, right? You know, after that. I think it kind of that, you know, again, I'm not saying I or Maverick paved the way, but I think it, the whole Southern thing and Maverick opened, and then, you know, there was all of a sudden there was more options. You know, you had, you know, Cream, H2O Vino, you know, all these things that all these other companies that are more versed like we are in open up. And I think the market's been more receptive to nowadays to that. You know, it used to be like, and it still is at some point, you know, as you know, I mean, accounts are going to say, well, I'm not going to deal with 20 distributors. I'm only going to deal with, you know, four or five or whatever. Five. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the old days, that was more difficult. Now, Maverick, the way it is now, I mean, we're usually one of those, you know, four or five, which is good. So it's, you know, easier to get your foot in the door. But I mean, again, there's a lot more competition than there was in those years, you know, with Winebow here. And, you know, now it will be interesting to see with Winebow and the Country Vintner thing with what goes on there. We've only lost one thing so far, but so, you know, who knows, you know, what happens there. And
because just like things might leave a portfolio to go to you, they might leave your portfolio.
Without a doubt. And, you know, what we lost was Felton Road, and we were doing Felton Road direct just because of my connections in Central Otago and being friends.
Because you like those wines.
Yeah, I love the wines.
You've been there.
Yeah, I'm friends with them. And I mean, the vineyard's like, a, you know, 2 miles down the road from us. And you know, actually, Blair, the winemaker, emailed me. He's like, we don't have a choice. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I completely understand.
So. And the reason they wouldn't have a choice is because they work with that company in other
markets. They had gone with the Craft in the States, which is the import side of Country Vintner. They had gone with them for all their markets. And I think, and that transpired because they were at Martin Scott. And then when Country Vintner bought Martin Scott, and then that's how it, then so he's, then that all transcended, and then with the Winebow Country Vintner merger, I think, yeah, there's wherever the Country Vintner is that they're going to be with. So,
but you also have distributors in other markets too.
Next was Vin Sauvage in Las Vegas, and that was solely because my dad had moved, basically based all his operations. I think he moved out there in '89 to Vegas. I mean, for a lot of things, for weather, tax reasons. He was a big blackjack player, so I think that made sense for him too. So we just decided
to go to the source.
Gonna go to the source. Exactly right. And actually, it kind of weaned him off of it. But eventually, yeah, we just decided, well, again, you know, with the competition thing out there, it's basically Southern and you know, Rocky Wirtz company. So we were basically like, well, let's give this a shot. And in the meantime, then Ken Fredrickson did NWA out there, and then Wirtz bought them. So we're like, well, we should go try to do this. And so that's how that transpired. And it's still going, you know, we were just hitting the stride in 2000, then 2007 happened, and it just, that whole town just
Vegas sort of, collapsed.
Yeah, just collapsed.
Not you.
No, Vegas just collapsed, like, though. It was like, and now it's back. It is back now, but yeah, for a while there, it was kind of like, oh, this is not, you know, this is not
like half-finished hotels.
Oh, yeah,
and
this
stuff
is like not going to work, you know,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is like over, you know, the party's over, but it's bounced back, so. So we did that, and then we went, guess it's been 2010 or 11 when we opened Pioneer Wine Company in Texas. And that was Greg Kasnoff, who's our partner there, was my college roommate. So, and he worked for, he was investment banker, lastly with Lehman, and he left before the implosion, but he was just sick of the game and had done very well for himself, but wanted a career change. And he honestly didn't know a lot about wine. He's come a long way, and he knows a lot about business. But yeah, so we've started there, and it's really taken off and covering the state now.
But it's interesting because you haven't tried to do the same portfolio in every state.
No, we have not. We've never stipulated to, like, okay, to like, to, I mean, to use Schaefer for example, I've never said to Doug, okay, hey, you've got to go with us in all these markets or none. And, you know, and somebody like Schaefer, though, he is with us everywhere but Texas. And, you know, and he, because they, with Republic there, they knock it out of the park for him. So there'd be no reason for him to move. But it's something that's a lot, you know, it seems to happen that way with some of these guys that all of a sudden they're like, okay, or can you give me an introduction to the other companies? Yeah. Our philosophy, and I don't know if it's correct or not, we didn't, that's why they're all named differently, was like we wanted to keep these all not separate, but, you know, not necessarily tied together. And that's why we chose to name them differently, too. So,
and it's probably true that different portfolios work in better in different markets.
Absolutely. I mean, it probably, like you said, to use a Dresdner example, I mean, it works great here. It didn't work so well in Colorado.
And sometimes you've represented these, too.
Yeah, yeah. We did, yeah. We did. We did in Colorado. We do in Texas now. Exactly, yeah. It was just a... It was a falling out, you know, it had nothing to do with me. It was with Classic and the Tease book, you know, it's got, you know, one of those weird things. They wanted me the champagne and, you know, feelings got hurt and stuff. So it's like, man, it's a whole thing.
You do a lot more business without feelings.
Yeah, I know you would, know without a doubt, without a doubt. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that, but yeah, we have the whole, we do have the whole book now at Pioneer in Texas. So, which is a great book.
How would you compare the different markets? Like in terms of who's the consumer in these different places and how do you serve them?
Here, there's more, I think, just because of the size of the market. It's less parochial, I think, than like a Colorado market or a Texas market. Those are still very mainstream. You know, sales are great, but, the you know, for instance, like the Dresdner book doesn't work in Texas near as well as it does here. I mean, I hate to keep using that as an example, but that's, to me, like the one example of where...
I don't think, you know, Joe would mind.
No, I don't think he would. He's probably up there, you like, know, geez, yeah.
Whitefish salad, also not big in Texas.
That's right.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Exactly right. And you do, you have all those steakhouses. So, I mean, most of them, you know, are going for that sort of wine list. And, I mean, there's some great, you know, buyers. There's some great Psalms down there. There's some great MS kids down there. But it's just more of that sort of market. Colorado, to some extent, is that way. And then Vegas, I mean, there's still a market, you know, you just get, you know, you can go anywhere from the craziness of, like, you know, whatever, you know, I'm used to be, you know, not so much now, be like, they'd ask you what it costs and just be like, yeah, send it. And, you know, it was almost like the more expensive, the better, you know. It was like, you know, they don't want anything inexpensive.
Did you ever pencil out the old number and put in a new number before?
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's like, what are you willing to pay?
Do you just said send it? Okay, hold on.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to make an adjustment on the invoice.
Exactly. Exactly right. I wasn't that smart.
But, I mean, a lot of times people talk about Vegas like it's dominated by one company or at most two companies. Mm-hmm. But it seems like you actually have a pretty big portfolio.
Yeah, we do. We have a big portfolio. I mean, we're kind of, there's the franchise law there. So if you're over 2,000 cases, you've either got to trade something out with somebody or they've got to, you know, let you go, which, you know, you can imagine how many times that happens. I mean,
so spell that out for me. What does that mean, the franchise law?
You have to, so if you are selling over 2,000 cases within the state of Nevada, you're lassoed to that distributor. So even with Vin Sauvage, I mean, if we're over 2,000 cases, like, do you, which we are, like European sellers, I mean, I think Eric's happy there, but we don't have to let him go if he wanted to go.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just, you know, you're stuck. And so that kind of, you know, you can't grow. I mean, you can grow, but you're growing, you know, with smaller brands, less than 2,000 cases.
I got
it. So, you know, which is, yeah, kind of a, you know, I don't foresee it changing, other, you know, but the other states obviously have franchise laws, you know, some do, some don't, but yeah, it's definitely a hindrance business-wise there. Because I know there are brands that are over 2,000 cases that would love to leave some other companies, but can't.
And then you also got into the producer side.
I did. We did get in the producer side, yes.
And so you ended up in New Zealand. How did that happen?
I went down, another friend of mine, John Larchet, who is an Australian importer, introduced me to Gary Farr, who in those years was at Bannockburn, who's a great guy, another great winemaker. And he was starting his own stuff and he was looking for a partner, you know, for capitalization. So I was like, oh, I'll go down. I grew up my dad had cotton farms in Australia. So I grew up part of my life in Australia. So it's always been sort of a second home for me. I'm like, yeah, sounds great. I'll go to have a look. And then on the way down, I had never been to New Zealand. So I stopped in New Zealand and did all the wine regions, but Hawke's Bay, nothing against Hawke's Bay, but I was more looking for the Pinot thing, you know, and started from Auckland, flew to Queenstown, to Central Otago, went back up north, and it sounds a little odd, but I really felt something about Central Otago. I'm like, I'm going to go back down there. So we went back, I was with my wife, so we went back down there. And just had a look and got more serious and see what was going on. And and kind of left, and then went over and met with Gary in Geelong. And I mean, nothing, I don't want to offend anybody from Geelong that's listening to this, but I mean, Geelong compared to Central Otago scenery wise, it was just like, oh, Central is just, and the wines were just, I think they get better and better every vintage. And the wines were coming along, guys like, I, you know, like Felton Road was the only wine I knew down there, but then guys like Gibson Valley when Grant Taylor was there, and you know, Sam Neill's there with the actor with the Two Paddocks stuff that Dean Shaw makes. I mean, there's some spectacular wines that really none of this country knows about, even really, in the scheme of things. So wound up, bought a sheep pasture, not I don't mean a flat one, it's like 20-25% slopes.
It actually looks really beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yes, yeah,
if you like, look, you're like, whoa, yeah, that looks,
it's
nice.
Yeah, it's
like I can understand what you mean by, yeah, it's like, it's seeing it and being like, yeah,
that's where all the, you know, the Lord of the Rings scenery was filmed. So it's that's, yeah, it's that scenery. And I'm,
what's the Gandalf vineyard like to farm?
Yeah. It's difficult.
So sometimes it's white, sometimes it's gray.
That's exactly right. No, so we did, and then we got you know, Ted and I have known each other, I think, just by
Ted Lemon.
Yeah, I was one of the first people on his mailing list. I think, I don't even know how I heard about it. I just was, and then we started representing him at Classic in the old days, and so I just like, okay, I got to get Ted to help out with this. And I, so
it seems pretty ambitious from my viewpoint. I mean, obviously you had the relationship.
We had the relationship, but I mean, he was, you know, he'd say he wasn't sure that, you know, it took a good 6 months and he was like, well, I don't know if I want to do this. And, but you know, his kids were young. He didn't know if he wanted to hop on the plane and travel like that, which I understand.
But doesn't he have some New Zealand connection of his own?
Now? Yeah. And I didn't know any of that at all. Yeah. Speaking of Grant Taylor, Grant Taylor was with, you know, Archery. When Gary Anders set up Archery Summit, Ted and Grant Taylor both helped. Grant Taylor was, I think, in Napa for 17 years before going back to New Zealand, and had spent time with Ted and Blair from Felton as well. So he knew all these guys. And then an American kid called Doug Weiser, who was Ted's assistant, Ted told Doug he thought he should go to New Zealand and go try to, you know, do something down there, which he did. He went to, you know, Dry River at first, and then he wound up as the assistant at Craigie, and then was, you know, tragically killed in a kite surfing accident. So, yeah, there was a lot of New Zealand connections. And I think that's kind of what put Ted over the edge in the end. So he called me one day and just said, you know, I think he got tired of me hounding him. He just said, let's get on a plane and go have a look.
So he helped you lay out the vineyard.
He did he did it. So we went down and took a look, and he was like, wow. He's like, I've never seen anybody pick something like this with, you know, not knowing, with that viticultural sort of background. And I hate to say it, I didn't know what the soil type was. So we got lucky there, but I had been, you know, through enough great vineyards of the world of what they look like to me. And that's,
but there's also skiing nearby. And
yes, there
you're
is
a skier,
skiing nearby.
Right?
Yes. Like, but you know what the crazy part of it is? I've never skied there yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In what, it was 2001 is when we bought the property. So what's that? I mean, 13 years? Yeah. I mean, I've never skied there yet. And you know what? I never thought, because the seasons are reversed. So I'm never down there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, where is the snow?
Exactly.
I came in December.
That's exactly
right. Again.
Exactly right. So I'm down there, you know, which is kind of nice. Though, Ted and I go down in January for the growing season, and then we're down there at harvest. You know, but this year when it was 40 below in Chicago, I was down there and, you know, calling home. My wife's like, it's 40 below. I'm like, you are so full of crap. 40 below. And I realized it really was. It's like, I'm like, yeah, it's about 85 Fahrenheit here. So
polar, yeah, vortex.
Exactly.
Never heard of it.
What's that? Yeah. So yeah, so Ted and laid out the vineyard. We brought two guys actually from Napa down there that laid it all out. And Ted and I, it's 25 acres, mostly Pinot, a little Riesling, and a little bit of Gruner Veltliner.
What's up with the Gruner thing?
We just harvested it this year. I just love Gruner, and I think we got enough to make like 150 cases tops. But
I mean, how much Gruner is in New Zealand?
You know what? There's more and more. You know, there wasn't much when we planted, but you know, it was kind of, Ted said that too. He's like, you know, he'd done some work in Austria and seen him, you know, Riesling and Gruner ripen side by side. So, and the Riesling was ripening and doing well in Central.
Sure.
So well, let's give
I've
it a
definitely
shot.
Had good Riesling.
Yeah. So let's give it a shot and see what happens. And so Ted and I, yeah, we did like 70 soil pits, and you know, it was mundane, you know, Ted down on the chipping away, and I was writing down his notes and, you know, what he's saying, and laid out the vineyard, and it's, and Ted asked me one day, he's like, would you do it biodynamically? I'm like, sure. So we've been BD since day one too as well.
Because that also seems rare for New Zealand.
It, you know what, it was in those years, but we got called a lot of like goofy, you know, names like the witch doctor thing, and what are these, you know, Yankee wankers doing? Once I heard, you know, and now there's, you know, as soon as
you're like, I'm from Kansas,
yeah,
motherfucker.
I'm from a farm, you know. Like, no, like, you know,
I am not a Yankee.
No, it's not. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like a Yankee wanker. I'm like, I think I was just offended, but I'm not for sure. So
I go to Rockies games.
That's right. That's exactly right. So so that's how that all started, and we did our first vintage, did our first commercial vintage 09. We made a little wine in 08, but didn't release it. So,
Nine was our you first bought one. It in 01, and then 7 years.
Well, we started planting years. In 03. So those were boom times in New Zealand. It was very difficult to even get the grapevines, and so what we were getting wasn't exactly up to par. We had a lot of problems with take. And, you know, and being BD is that's the one detriment that I do see to BD is like, as it takes them a lot longer to get up the stake, as they say.
I see.
Yeah. Then, you know, I mean, we had people tell us, well, why don't you just start chemically doing
right.
it and then
yeah.
wean it? And I was like, well, that doesn't make much sense. Then
you could have made it 2001 and a half.
That's exactly right. But it gives somebody heroin for a while. And
right,
like,
right.
Yeah, now it's done, you know?
Yeah, right.
Now
yeah.
you're on your own. So enjoy. But, that's it. And then we...
I guess that's why I've never had the wines.
Yeah, no,
like,
there's...
Because there just haven't been that many.
There haven't been that many. I should have brought you a bottle.
Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Still waiting. I've yet to ever try any. Feeling kind of thirsty.
And I don't have one. we just released 2012. So, yeah, but it hasn't been... You know, it's been... Australia and New Zealand are huge markets for us. The UK and Denmark, believe it or not, is one that kind of came out of the blue with me with a surprise. So,
but the United States isn't so big on New Zealand right now?
Not so much. Not as much, in all honesty. I mean, I don't really know why. I think sort of that, that Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc is, I don't want to say tarnished the image, but it's like New Zealand wine seems to me that most people perceive that it should be inexpensive.
I see.
And then when it's not inexpensive, it's like, well, why is that? So
it's kind of like Chinese food in New York.
Exactly. So why is it expensive Chinese food?
Right,
because
right.
it's good. So it's, Burn Cottage is, you know, $60 on a retail shelf. And, you know, but I mean, our yields, I mean, we had our biggest yields this year at 2.25 tons an acre. You know, most of our yields have been 1.5 tons. And, you know, and everything biodynamic and everything done, you know, natural in the winery, it's not a cheap undertaking to make.
And
so
Ted's still the head winemaker.
Ted is still the head winemaker, yeah.
Because I'm not aware of a Ted Lemon wine that sells for less than $60.
No, you can't do it. You know, I mean, we got to pay him obviously too, and we got to pay, you know, for us to go down there. You know, I mean, that's it's a labor of love.
Ski passes, not yet.
One day. One day.
That's why you haven't been able to
Ted,
ski yet.
I don't think
you're
Ted
like,
skis.
Can't sell this
We're lucky.
Stuff.
Yeah, Ted doesn't ski.
But I mean, you're the only guy I know that has an estate in New Zealand and in Germany.
Well, the German thing, you know, really came about with my brother. My brother lives in California, and he's actually friends with Rudy Weiss. So,
which is a portfolio you represent.
With German wines, and so we had gotten wind through Kevin when he was with Terry that Kola Rupprecht may be something, you know, maybe changing there.
Kevin Pike,
yeah, Kevin Pike, yeah.
He gave you a heads up.
Yes, that something may be changing there, and then Rudy said it too. And so my brother got the wheels turning, I think, and just contacted Bernd Felipe, who was the owner of Kola Rupprecht, and it was true. Yeah, he doesn't have any heirs. He has a vineyard in Portugal, and I think he's more interested in that now, and wanted to go that route, and didn't, you know, just wanted to sell the winery, which, yeah, I don't think it's been out of the original families since 1680 or something.
And he was there for like 30 years.
Yeah. And now some Yankee wankers on it, but
right.
But, we bought it because we wanted to really just preserve the style of the wine, as you know, and as some people do know, I mean, they're different, they're old school German wines. They're not the new squeaky clean school. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I love Dunhoff. I love Müller Cotoir. Don't get me wrong, but this is just a different style that isn't really done that much in Germany anymore. And we wanted to preserve that. So,
cause it's native yeast, long lease time in barrel
and oak. Yes. There's some foudres in that place that were Burns' grandfather's. So still, so It's an old school regime there.
And it's in the falls.
It's in the falls, yeah. It's in a village called Kaldstad in the falls, which is just, you know, looks like a, the place itself looks like a Grimm's fairy tale. It's just, yeah, it's really, you know, with the vineyard, you know, and
Before Samhain. Or after the children get eaten?
Either or. And then, yeah, the vineyard just across the street from the winery, Samhain, which is the main, you know, sort of
the Samhain is,
yeah,
the big,
exactly,
one,
exactly, the Grand,
the
Cru,
old,
yeah,
one,
yeah.
There's like four or something.
Yeah, there is four, but Samhain's like the Grand Cru of the region, basically. It means sow stomach, which they do this at the restaurants there. They do a Samhain, which is a stuffed pig stomach with, I don't know what's all, some sort of typical German, some sort of sausage and meat in it, and potatoes, and it's delicious.
It's a dish as well.
Yeah, it's a dish.
Are you supposed,
yeah,
to drink wines from there with that dish?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of,
yeah,
cool.
It's very cool.
Like, I've never seen something like that.
No,
it's
great, cool.
Where it's named the same as the wine.
And I guess it got, the vineyard supposedly got the name because of in the old days, they thought it looked, was shaped like a sow stomach. So
I see.
That was what's happened. Yeah. So yeah, we finally, you know, were able to, yeah, it was an easy deal between translation of every document, you know, and blah, 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 blah. But we finally were able to get that going. And then, you know, Burns is about out. We kept him around for, I think, 4 or 5 years. And then we actually have Dominic Sona, who we've hired as there to run it day to day. He's been there a couple of years ago. He's a great kid who actually worked for Ted as well, too. So there's a Ted Lemon connection there as well. So.
And what are the wines like? There's a lot of grape varieties.
Yes, there are. Yeah, more Riesling. I mean, Riesling is obviously the focus. And you know, and the other thing I always forget to say, I mean, we're trying to do more dry Riesling, which Kohler always has. And that's what kind of my brother and I are into. Nothing against, you know, sweet Rieslings.
But it also seems like a region where you could do that.
Yeah, you can.
Like, I mean, the ripeness.
It's not the Mosel. It's warmer than, you know, most. I think it's the warmest growing region in
Seems
Germany.
Like it.
Yeah, it's not, yeah.
Especially since global warming.
Exactly.
Like.
And it's, so, I mean, so there's no ripeness problem. You know, yeah, there's a little Spätburgunder. Then, you know, yeah, there's Pinot Blanc, there's Chardonnay, there's, yeah, all in just sort of small varieties. But
like, yeah, Muscat, Gewürztraminer,
exactly.
Scheurebe,
yeah.
Everything but Grüner.
Everything. You know? Everything but Grüner. Knock on wood. But like, yeah, like the Pinot Blanc has kind of become a cult wine here.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever had it.
Yeah, it's good.
Hint, hint.
Hint, hint, yeah. So I should be writing this down.
Yeah.
I've never had Rumiere.
Yeah, right. Because, yeah, you bring in some of those wines, too. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. get you the book.
But you make, you know, that wine, and what's the Samhain vineyard like as a vineyard, like to work?
You know what? That's a good question. I can't be honest with you. I've been in it, but I've never worked it.
Because your brother kind of
handles
it.
Yeah, he handles that mostly. Yeah, I mean, I've been over there, I guess, 3 times now, but I've never really, you know, done anything in the vineyard like I do in New Zealand.
Well, it's also newer than in New Zealand.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
you purchased in 10.
Yeah, and purchased and planted, and it was a little whole different ball game than what Kohler is. You know, with up and going with, I think we're doing 8,000 cases of wine, which we haven't changed at Kohler. So
that's really not much.
No. But that's what, you know, we haven't experienced. But it's just, you know, it's just such a huge, Germany is such a huge market for Kohler. I mean, that it's, I think back in the day when Terry was bringing in, he was bringing in like 200 cases or something like that, and mostly of Halbtruck and stuff. So,
well, yeah, of course it was.
Exactly.
Of course it wasn't fully dry.
No, exactly. I mean? Exactly.
But it's with Dresner now.
Yep. So it's Dresner now. Yep.
You represent Dresner, yep. But also Josefa used to work for
And Josefa, yeah, worked for Maverick here. For, boy, quite a while. And then, yeah, when she moved on, she moved over to Dresner from Maverick. Yep.
Did she call you a Yankee?
She's still there.
Yeah.
She calls me worse. She sent me actually, I think it was 3 weeks ago. There's an Australian wine writer who's a friend of mine. He's a great, crazy kid. Mike Benny's his name. And somehow he was in San Francisco, and she ran into him somehow randomly in San Francisco. And my name came up, I guess, probably through the Chicago thing. And they sent me a picture of both of them flipping me off through the text.
It's good to have friends. Yeah. Make you feel warm inside.
Exactly. So that
show they care about you.
That tells you what she thinks of me.
But I mean, it's interesting because in the same way that you have distributorships in different markets, you have two, what I think of as very different wines.
Very much so. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're definitely, you know, one, you know, I mean, Kohler being that old school, is, we always kind of joke, is made in a more oxidative style of winemaking, and where Ted, you know, is pretty reductive style of winemaking. So yeah, they're completely opposite. It's going to be interesting to see what the we picked our first Riesling at Burn Cottage this year, so it'll be interesting to see what it is side
by
side.
I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It is going to be
comparative.
The fruit looked good and everything. You know, but you know, we'll see what Ted does.
Well, Pinot Noir you could do too.
Yeah, with the Pinot Noir, they are. Yeah, that is true. That is a good point.
But I mean, is there ever a case where it's the same customer that you sell both of those wines to? Because it wouldn't seem like it would be.
No, yeah, it can be. We don't make a point of it. Like, you know, if I'm doing a market visit, like, you know, I just was, well, with Polliner, I guess, last month in New York. And then it's either with, and when we're with different distributors sometimes too, it's hard to do both. But yeah, I think we always basically talk about each property, but we're not necessarily. I don't know if I've ever had, I was trying to think about that, if we've ever had. If I've ever had both wines open at the same time in the market, I don't think I have. I mean, it's kind of known that we own both and we talk about both, but now it's, you're kind of focused on one or the other because you're, yeah, you're exactly right. Somebody may want a New Zealand Pinot Noir that wants a German Riesling or vice versa.
How many business cards do you have? Like, is there one for every company, or no. Is it like a flip over thing?
It started out that way.
German wine grower, and then you flip it over, and it's like New Zealand.
No, it started out that way. I'm notorious. My wife's always joked, you know, like, you don't have a card. I'm like, no, I don't have one. I don't have one today to give to you. It's just, you know, I totally just for space doing that, but I just use that. It just
yeah, but you're the same guy who like didn't really have a headshot.
No, exactly.
Let me see if my wife's got a picture of me somewhere. No, I'll send it to you.
That actually, my son took that the day you asked for it. So.
I'll be honest. There's a certain kind of guy that sends you a headshot where he's wearing sunglasses. Yeah,
It's
not everybody.
I didn't even think about it. To tell you the truth. I hadn't taken that. I actually washed my with this 6 feet of hair I have. I washed my hair that day, so I thought, this is a good idea. This is good.
Thank you. From all of us who are looking at that, want to say thank you.
Yeah, now everybody's going to see that shot and be like, you washed your hair that day?
I just wonder, you know, what's going on with the eyes? Yeah, a bloodshot that morning? You know what I mean?
Well, it probably was a good chance of that. Like I told you, there are today, so.
And what about, I mean, what do you like in terms of wine? It seems like so many different portfolios, so many different business interests.
As far as a personal, what I like
to
drink.
Who are you? What are you drinking these days?
I mean, I sound snobby when you say this, but I definitely have more of an old world palate, you know, and I think that's with New Zealand's what attracted me a little bit to that. It definitely, it's still New World, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's still the fruit there, but there's still this underlying, you know, minerality and herbiness that's, you know, and acid and, you know, our alcohol levels are, I mean, next year, the 2013 is going to be 12.8 natural alcohol, so which is kind of unheard of in a New World Pinot Noirs. You know, Ted's gotten literally down to about those levels too, and you know, we're wondering if it's biodynamics. But yeah, so I mean, I went through stages. I mean, I had the probably like everybody else, I had the big, you know, that 98 vintage of all the Aussie Shirazes and stuff. Man, I was into it, you know, and ready to go, and loved it, and bought a bunch of them, and yeah, just progressively seemed to become more of a, you know, like I describe myself as a Burgundy snob. Tell you the truth, I mean, not necessarily drinking, you know, Rousseau and Rumier all the time, but you know, even you know, Cote de Chalonnays and little things like that. I love Pinot.
But it seems like at the same time, you understand that people go through a progression sometimes.
Absolutely,
and you understand that markets are different.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you did. I think everybody goes through that progression. I mean, I don't know if I've ever ran into anybody. It's like, well, I guess maybe if they grew up drinking wine.
It depends if they grew up drinking wine with
their
family.
That's exactly right.
I think that's the whole.
That is the whole deal. Yeah. So if you grew up like, you know, drinking Burgundy with dinner, yeah, I'm sure then you get it. But.
Well, I don't know if you've heard the Peter Wasserman interview, but it's pretty sick.
Is it? Yeah. What he grew up wanting.
Yeah. Like, you know, hanging out and it's like jokes with Aubert at the table and stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? As a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just like me.
Yeah. We had that too, except his name was Aubert the Bales Monster.
That's right, exactly.
That was my family. Yeah.
At least you knew somebody named Aubert. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. It was actually Aubert.
Sounds better saying it Aubert.
Yeah, we used to make it sound nice for him.
I met him last year. He was in Central Otago.
Yeah, he went into New Zealand, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he did that. And him and Ted are obviously know each other well. And he came by the vineyard. And yeah. Really, really nice, humble, not, you know, when you're thinking DRC, it's not what I, you know, You don't think, you know, I'd be thinking, I'd be like, I'm DRC, you know, and he wasn't like that at all. So
yeah, he'd have like, he'd like point to himself. Yeah,
exactly.
Like with the thumbs yeah, yeah, backwards.
Exactly.
Like,
I thought he'd have a DRC.
I'm the man.
I thought he'd have, I'd have, if I owned DRC, I'd have a big DRC tattoo on me somewhere.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would. Three of them.
Three of them, exactly.
One under each Latosh, skull.
Latosh, yeah. Yeah. Briesborg.
But what are those scenes like? I mean, you know, we had Nick Mills on the show.
Yep.
You know, yep. Isn't the New Zealand scene close?
People yeah, close? It's very close. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, there's a New Zealand wine writer, another guy who's a great guy, who's an ex TV commentator there, John Hawksby. He calls it, he calls us all a bunch of pirates down there. I mean, it was, it's a very close knit. I mean, we're all older with kids now, but like back in the day, I mean, it was a wild, you know, it was probably Nick can allude to that as, too as well. It's, you know, it was a wild time, you know, and it, and everybody, you know, very welcoming and got along, and we all seemed to be the same sort of personalities and kindred spirits. And like I said, now we're all a little bit older now, but yeah, it was a very, yeah, and still that way. I mean, everybody willing to share ideas, and, you know, and so are we. I mean, you know, people, you know, we were doing stuff, you know, people hadn't seen before, and, you know, and we're willing to, you know, show them, and not a big deal, you know, not like, you know, don't, you can't come in the winery and see this. So, and they were likewise, it's the same way.
What about Germany? I mean, is...
You know what's more, more closed, you know, it's more German.
There's more BMWs on the streets.
Yeah, exactly. More
Benzes. Several more, yeah, Mercedes.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah, it's a little more rigid. Yeah. Which, you know, it is. I mean, it definitely is, yeah. I'm not saying I don't, you know, that you couldn't walk into somewhere and try and ask them, you know, what to, you know, but I don't know how well it would go over. I wouldn't like, I mean, we could go ask Nick anything and be like, yeah, what do you want? Yeah. What do you do if you see this, or, you know, but that's the great thing about with Ted involved too. I mean, there's not much he hasn't seen anywhere, you know, with all his vintages or in places. So.
And so what's next for you? Like Mars? You're like, you know, no colonizing
more,
other planets?
No more vineyards. I can tell you that. No, no more vineyards. That's just, yeah. A friend of mine tried to get me to do one, and I would have loved to have done it in Barolo, because that's another, I love, that's, you know, yeah, Barolo Barbaresco, yeah, is the shit to me too as well. You know, it's my, I tell people, they look at me like I'm crazy, you know, but like, after, second favorite grape out of Pinot Noir is Nebbiolo to me, so yeah.
I gotta be honest, I put it the other way for me.
Yeah, like, so, yeah, so, yeah, so, exactly, yeah, so, yeah.
It's Pinot's
yeah.
number two.
But. Yeah, exactly, so it's the same, to me, they have a lot of the same characteristics, you know, and but yes, yeah, no, I think that's part's done. You know, we've looked at different states. I mean, the great thing about having these books now is you have suppliers that say, hey, God, you know, you really need to look at, you know, Florida, and you really, you know, which we did. We've looked at Florida, we've looked at Louisiana, we've looked at all these different states, just nothing's ever clicked yet, you know. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we don't have any, hate to say, we haven't had any rhyme or reason with the markets we've done before, that they've all just had a reason and lined up. So, you know, we don't sit in that round and think, I'm not thinking Wisconsin just because, you know, we're right across the, you know, the border, but.
You're not sitting there with a giant globe and like, a
no, exactly.
Pen, like,
yeah.
All of this
exactly.
is mine.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I was a friend of mine at, Aaron Meeker, that works for Vine Streets now, he called me the global wine overlord.
Well, it is kind of crazy, man. It's kind of like, I mean, the way you play it is like, oh, I woke up one day, and then they said I had a place in Germany.
Well, that's kind of...
And then a couple weeks later, crazy.
That's kind of... Yeah,
you know
kind
what
of
I mean?
That, but let me, unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, that's about all the thought that went into a couple of those things. It was like, wow, really?
That was a long yeah. night of drinking.
Yeah, it was.
What'd you get? A black eye? Well, I got a vineyard in Germany.
Exactly. The one thing I must confess with either one of those is I didn't realize that how the travel, you know, you never... You're down, like, especially in Central Otago, down there excited about it, you know, for the first couple of times, and you realize, oh, shit, this is a long way.
It's like
away.
16 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, now, I mean, thank God for miles and stuff. Now, I mean, I'm too much of a prima donna. Now, I used to do a coach, so it's like I'm not right. doing a coach, you know, back there. Was,
you probably have so many miles, they put you in the cockpit.
That's exactly it. Probably like, would ask. You know,
I'm sorry, sir. First class isn't good enough.
You know,
let's
cockpit.
Put you up here. You mind just sitting with these headphones on?
They let Ted do that.
But they also have, like, planes in New Zealand just to get around, right? Like, it's kind of like a bus service.
It's the largest, I think, how's that go? It's the largest, they have the most helicopters per capita in the world. Yeah, there's. I mean, the helicopters of them are like, don't even think about it. I mean, they fight frost with helicopters even. I mean, we fight it with water, but they'll bring in a helicopter if it looks like it's going to be a frost to try to, you know, to move the air. And, you know, I don't know how that ever really gets paid for. With the, I mean, I think it's like $3,500 an hour. And then you have them on standby just in case. Yeah, it adds up.
That always seems like dangerous to me. Like, right. You know, well, like in MASH when the chopper comes down, everyone has to duck, and if they don't duck, they get knocked over and maybe chop their head off.
That's exactly right. I don't disagree with you.
I mean, you know, without the Viet Cong, yeah. But still, you know, it just seems dangerous. Still, low-flying helicopter, you know.
And a lot of times some of those vineyards and the big ones, there's, you know, five or six of them out there doing the same thing. I don't know. I don't think it does probably make sense in, you know, a lot of times, but yeah, it's better, I guess, than losing your crop.
It's probably sure fun for somebody too.
Yeah, but those,
hey, take the chopper around.
I think those helicopter pilots too are a little, you know. Sometimes I just a couple of those we walk in and you're like, am I doing the right thing here?
I got three tattoos of skulls, but this guy's got eight. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember, you know, it was Raj. Raj Parman, he was down there.
Yeah, because he went down there.
Yeah, he went down there recently, too. Yeah. He actually visited Burn Cottage too. But then he had the next morning, he had a helicopter flight, and I think we had gotten a little too crazy too, and he was like nervous about the whole flight anyway. And I think it went okay though. So, but
well, I've still seen him walking around.
Still around, and like,
all the fingers are still there.
Yeah, so. I haven't seen him for a while, but yeah.
but what about distribution? I mean, if you said some things look like they might not work, some things, you know, you didn't follow up on that opportunity. I mean, what does it look like when it does, when it is going to work, and what does it look like when it's not going to work? What are those scenarios?
You know what? I think if any of us knew that, we'd all, you know, be wealthy beyond our, you know, than we could ever dream of. The biggest thing you got to do is, and it was a hard one to do a lot of times, sometimes you got to remove your personal preference out of it, you know, because like I said, I mean, it costs the same to deliver 10 cases than it does to deliver one. And sometimes, you know, you need to fill the truck. So it may not be a wine that is in your vein or your style, but you know, it's, you know, it's solid. It's nothing, you know, nothing's wrong with it and it sells well. And I'd say, I mean, you've got to have sales. I mean,
it's not like you're selling poison or something.
No, exactly. You're just maybe selling something that you don't necessarily prefer as a palate to drink. And I mean, I think that's every I don't know if anybody would ever admit that, but that's, to me, it's what every distributorship does. I mean, you have to. So, I mean, sometimes you know, if a brand is moving over and you see numbers, you know, you can kind of look and say, well, they're not doing very well there. How are we going to do better? Or you look and say, well, they're not calling on, you know, these accounts and blah, 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 blah. Each scenario is different, but sometimes you really don't. You just kind of, I mean, we take a lot of stuff just because we taste it and go like, holy shit, that's good. And then it's like, wow, you know, I mean, there's a great New Zealand wine and it just didn't work here for whatever reason. Pyramid Valley, I don't know if you know those wines. And Mike Fershing, who's an American kid, doing great stuff. And I mean, literally some of the best New World Chardonnay I've tasted anywhere. And it just did not work here. You know, we tasted them. I had had them before and then tasted them with the team out there. And everybody's like, geez, this is stunning. And it, you know, just didn't work. So who knows, you know. I mean, but again, you know, expensive New Zealand Chardonnay and Pinot Noir that, you know, a lot of people didn't get it.
Are there also limits to, like, you know, say you have 20 successful brands from a general region, you know, can you invest in 40 or do you need to kind of keep it to 20 if it's, you know, I mean, even if you find another 10 that you really like, are you supposed to bring those on too?
That's good. It's always, you know, I kind of joke, you know, we're basically jugglers. We've always got some brand in the air, you know, somebody, you know, because there's only so much you can do and there's only so much you can sell. And that's a tough question. Do you take on, I mean, we've had that, you know, the biggest one I remember, and we did it, was with Classic. You know, we have Winebow there, and it was like, well, you know, Dalterra wanted to move. It was like, do we take Dalterra with Winebow? And we did, and it's worked out great. But it was really, boy, I hope this, you know, works, and, you know, we're able to.
But there's keep a number of both, and there's a number of Italian restaurants in Aspen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's a hard one to crack. Do you, you know, where do you cap it? I mean, do you have? I don't even know how many Napa cabs we have now, but yeah, do you take 20, do you take 40, do you take 100? I don't know. I mean, it just kind of, you know, it's rolling the dice sometimes. And
it seems like some markets have moved fairly slowly in evolution of taste, and some markets it's like, exactly, wow, right, 6 months are over, thing.
That's exactly right.
Do you ever feel like, I don't know, I don't want to get held, I don't want to hold the bag.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, when I don't want to, like, by the time I set up a portfolio, something new could be hip.
And absolutely. Absolutely. You know. I mean, it's the natural wine thing, which I think is still going. I mean, but yeah, do you want to have a 1,000 natural wines when the shit hits the fan? I don't, probably not, So
is that a Britannomyces joke?
Yeah. Yeah. Or worse. I'm not bashing natural wine. I shouldn't do that. Some of them I don't understand, I must confess, some of them.
But, people say that to me, like, every day.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest, some commercial wines I don't understand.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But I think, like, there's some natural wines that there's a fault going on, and then it's like, oh, it's a natural wine. I'm like, no, you should have corrected the pH on that. That's what you should have done, So, but yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of, like, commercial wines, which definitely I don't understand either. So... yeah, and that's a good question. I'm sorry, I don't have to answer that one either. I mean, how do you spot the next big trend? Missed the spirits one, I can tell you that, like I said earlier. Yeah. Oh, it's a fad. All these mixologists. Yeah.
Sorry, Alex Trebek, I missed that category.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's, I don't know. That's the world.
Yeah, that is the world. That is the world.
Marcus Sauvage, he's done well in this world. Maybe he'll create a vineyard in the next one.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here today.
Good to be here, man.
Marcus Sauvage of Classic Wines in Colorado, Maverick in Chicago, Vin Sauvage in Las Vegas, and Pioneer in Texas.
That's right.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Chicago. It has Lakeshore Drive. It has the Cubbies. It has Willis Tower. And now it has 750. That's right. The amazing 750 service is now available in Illinois. And that means that its powerful and easy-to-use search tools for identifying wholesale pricing, locating trade tastings, saving lists of tasting notes, and much more, including the very excellent tool for processing credit apps, is now a click away for Chicagoland. To celebrate the launch, we here at the show are talking with buyers, distributors, retailers, and sommeliers from the great city of Chicago, and releasing that series of episodes to you in the coming weeks. What is going on in the Windy City? You're going to hear it from the people who know. And if you are tuning in from Chicago itself, be sure to give 750 a try. 750.com, it's in Illinois, and it's the future. Thanks for listening. Our road trip to Chicago will continue in the next episode coming up. If you're digging what we're up to, you can always find us on our website, alldrinktothatpod.com, or follow along on Twitter for updates, @drinktothatpod. We're also on Facebook, and I take some snazzy pictures on Instagram. If you want to really support the show, please consider a donation of funds to this ridiculously shoestring operation that lives on a wing and a prayer, or just purchase a t-shirt to wear around. You can find the details about how to do so on our website. And if funds aren't at the ready, just leave a nice comment on iTunes. Every little bit helps. Cheers.